SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
An introduction so good, we had to do it twice. Good morning. I don't know how much sleep anybody got, but I hope you're doing all right. And it is certainly gorgeous, and I mean phenomenal here at Keeneland as we get that much closer to Breeders' Cup. Good morning. Day three, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to SiriusXM online and at our website, too, stevebick.com. And, you know, I was trying to figure out a parallel to what's been going on here the last, well, at this point, call it, 15 hours. And I suppose it's a good time to mention the two finish lines at Keeneland. Most of the races stop at the big finish line. There's a couple of the baby races, the main track baby races, they stop at the first wire. But the big features, they go to the regular finish line. Yeah, so those winners, the pictures will be taken of most of those horses that finish right down here. It's a topic that does fit in, bear watching, because in fact I was writing up the juvenile for our betting companion, and it's really key to Jackie's Warrior's chances, because he's going to get pressure. There's too much speed, and the short stretch for him is important, and because I think he's going to be needing the wire. There's just too much other pace. And you know, unless he gets the lead and gets to relax completely and gets loose again, and I suppose that's a possibility. But I ended up picking Reinvestment Risk. And it just feels like he's got a scenario that's much more favorable than he faced in the Hopeful and in the Champagne. Trying to really find a few key leans. Everybody keeps asking, "Who do you like? Who do you?" It's tough. It feels like a Breeders' Cup that, while I'm sure everybody, you know, will ultimately, you know, get to the weekend and have a horse or two, you know, each day that they like, and you know, the races, the undercard races, you can bet on those as well. I've had certainly over the years have done okay in a lot of the undercard races and in the multis, but it doesn't. I don't get the sense talking to people. I don't get the sense that, you know, everybody's locked in. And you know, I think there's horses that they like, but a fun, compelling set of races. And I don't know, or I guess I could speculate that the uniqueness of the season has got some people off balance to a degree, if you know what I mean. Because things didn't fully unfold the way we're so used to over the years, there's just that, I won't call it a lack of confidence per se, but there's just a slight tilt, a kilter that it I think is muting some people's view of the races, and you know, adding just a just enough degree of uncertainty. So it, from that standpoint, it should make for a very volatile. There's no volatile here, but there might be volatility on the racetrack and on the tote board. How about that? That seems fair enough. Pretty much everybody, after some delays, has arrived. And this morning, it was very tough to keep track of everybody. There was just, there's just been a parade of horses. I'd say, more than double what we've seen, at least my first 2 days. We'll talk to Mike Welch probably tomorrow in our, either late in hour two or early in hour three. And even Mike seems to be reflecting or acknowledging. He said, I've only been here, a week and change. Usually he's got 2 weeks. I don't really have anybody that has, really grabbed me. And I completely understood what he meant. It's been a different year, which we all acknowledge. And, the one thing we know is they're going to run these races Friday and Saturday. You're going to have your opportunities. So we'll take every chance. And, I said to Mike, in fact, it feels like I actually talked to Michael Bacik, too, the champ, this morning. And he's, he's a political consultant, so he's been very much tied on with his, day job. And so, and he said, I don't think I'm going to play in the, we're talking about the BC Betting Challenge. And he said, I don't think I'm going to play. And he said, I just haven't, just don't have a feel, haven't looked at the races. And said, it feels like a, the kind of opportunity for, if a player like Michael Bacik is going to watch and just, watch the board and pick off some horses, then, that tells you a little bit. And by the way, the BCVC, you still got time to sign up or maybe put together a partnership, a couple of friends, and 10,000 to buy in, 7,500 bankroll, and 2,500 to the prize pool. And one of the great, really, I have as much fun a lot of times during the weekend checking the, checking the leaderboard and looking for familiar names and watching the fur fly. We're going to talk to Brad Free in about 7 or 8 minutes, and had been looking forward to Brad's coverage of the distaff. We never talked to him during the lead up, but we knew what the lineup was going to be. And so in addition to the distaff, just as well, we get the opportunity to talk to Brad and get a wider array of his weekend opinions. Sid Fernando, of course, top of hour two. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale, and Sid's opportunity to pick out, usually he'll pick out a couple of juveniles. He'll do some pedigree work on that front, and then you'll also probably get a couple of ideas. Sid has had a sparkling record over the years in Breeders' Cups, finding a price or two or more. So looking forward to checking in with Sid. And Vance Hansen is going to join us. Vance, one of the European observers. Marcus Hirsch tomorrow. Hope to get to Steve Anderson, too. Nick Luck, exchange notes with Nick. Nick could turn up, I guess, as early as today even. So tons of that. Kev Humphreys is going to join us, the long shot lad who everybody loves. We got to take advantage of Kev as much as we can, because he's moving to Singapore. Might be a little bit more difficult to avail ourselves of his insights. But Kev Humphreys tomorrow, coming off of a spectacular showing at Royal Ascot. And there was clamoring for the long shot lad. we're gonna try to do something actually with Kev, because we registered the domain longshotlad.com. So we're gonna turn Kev into a proposition. Well, it's just so much fun. Long shot, lad. It's perfect. Kev, by the way, is part of the lineup of the At the Races betting companion that we've put together. Still got some more editing to do after the show today and late this afternoon, I'd imagine. We'll send it out. And Seth Merrill, Joe Bianca, Kev, Nick Tamaro, Hammer, James Scully, and myself. We each did two races, and actually the format, you know, I gave him a format idea, but Kev wrote kind of freestyle, and so did Hammer. Hammer really fleshed out his races. Rick did the Dirt Mile and the Fillion Mare Turf, and what's interesting about those two is that they're back-to-back on Saturday, and so he's playing some doubles. I've got the Juvenile and the Classic, and so there's the opportunity to hook up the Juvenile and the Classic and the two-day double as well. So I did it on that front. Seth did the Juvenile Turf Sprint and the Juvenile Fillies. Joe Bianca is doing the Juvenile Turf and the Big Turf. And Kev did Juvenile Fillies Turf and the Mile. Nick Tamaro, both sprints. And James Scully, the Turf Sprint and the Distaff. So look forward to that. Brought to you by BetMakers and the BetMakers Bonanza. So we had that conversation with kept losing Dallas, but you got the idea if you were listening to the replay from yesterday. And they keep we'll keep you apprised of the progress. And interesting that, you know, they may push that through at Trenton that much more quickly, based on what Bill Pascrell passed along. So we'll talk to Seth today too. It just occurs to me it is Wednesday, so Seth later as well, and more. We'll have a couple of other visits, I imagine, between now and noon. I don't really have, you know, other than what you're seeing, you know, if you've been watching, you know, any of the TVG morning show, and you can watch it later, and they're putting up segments. At this point, you're just, you know, watching horses and seeing who catches your eye. It's been difficult, actually, to really parse out anybody that, you know, other than fleeting glances. It's been too brief and there's too many at this point. So a lot of it, you know, we'll get obviously some clocker thoughts, like from Mike Welsh, and I'll reach for Gary Young and get some of that. But feels like replays and PPs are going to be your guide more so than usual coming in. So that's again, I'm doing, I think all of us are kind of operating by feel. I'm going to reach for Brad and get started. And as we do that, I also want to slip in at various junctures. I mentioned yesterday, you know, some of the riding assignments, and as we basically discovered when we had that conversation with Kieran McLaughlin, how well mounted Luis Saez was going to be coming into this. But there's some interesting, there's some very interesting assignments and horses that landed. Javier Castellano has got a nice book of mounts, and starts for Chad with Editor at Large in the Juvenile Fillies Turf. He's got Rombauer. I put Rombauer in underneath a little bit as a exotic candidate in the Juvenile. It feels like a you know, a potential. You're looking for that reverse tri-key type horse. Then he rides Speech in the Filly and Mare Sprint. We've certainly talked plenty about her. Front Run the Fed, who, you know, that turf sprint, why not, right? As eligible, I think, as anybody. He's got Rushy for Michael McCarthy in the Dirt Mile. It's going to be a price. He's on Rushing Fall, Javier is, of course, for Chad. He's on Vacoma for George Weaver. Digital Age for Chad in the Mile. Then Back to George for Point of Honor in the Distaff. And Global Campaign for Stanley Huff. So Javier Castellano had a very nice set of mounts. Haven't heard anybody bring up Javier, for instance. And, Saez, we ran down with Kieran, the impressive list. Joel Rosario, I wanted to make sure to get a handle on. And Joel, as you might expect, has got a nice set of mounts. So we'll keep doing that. I'll keep adding, you know, some of those, you know, some of the roster of Jock, something I do every year. And we've also, maybe tonight, I got to go through and get my lone wolf jockeys, the ones that are have one mount on the Breeders' Cup card. Brad Free joining us from the Daily Racing Form. Brad, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Looking forward to Friday and Saturday over at Keeneland. Some excellent betting races and, you know, some championship caliber performances, I'm sure, are on tap. And just to follow up on what you were talking about earlier with regards to workouts compared to replays and PPs, I'll tell you what, replays and PPs to me are the bread and butter of handicapping. I know that everybody likes to get involved in all the clocker situation. We're talking Breeders' Cup, and most of these horses are training very well because they are very good horses. So I'll take replays and PPs over workout analysis just about any day of the week.
Well, on that topic, I mean, how did you sense, and I know that, you know, each of the form correspondents, you know, track a race, but then, you know, you guys do select, you do have selections for the entire slate of 14. How did you find approaching this, Brad? I was speculating that it feels a little bit more uncertain than usual, and that you know, getting a handle on the groups of horses, and we've got almost all full fields, it seemed a little more unwieldy than usual.
Well, the thing that I miss most of all is being out in the mornings and talking with trainers and jockeys about everything under the sun. That's the one thing that this whole pandemic crisis has eliminated from the possibility, and that's just casual conversations with horsemen, and you pick up so much nuance just talking, just off the record, casual conversations. Somebody might say something, and you go, wow, that kind of, you know, that makes a little bit more sense. I need to go back and take a look at this. Somebody else says something else. This horse had a bad trip that you might have missed. The conversation with horsemen and also with other handicappers, I'm talking person-to-person communication and dialogue, that's the thing that I miss the most of what we're going through right now. So, I mean, I'm not going to pretend that I'm a workout analyst. We have guys that do and do it very well, Mike Welsh and Gary Young, for starters. I'm not going to be able to look at a workout and go, wow, that's a horse I'm going to bet on. These are good horses. The thing that I miss, like I said, it's the dialogue with horsemen and handicappers that, you know, we all miss the person-to-person contact with other human beings. And that's the thing that's the one thing that's missing. And when you're talking about 14 races, I mean, you know, I think it's too many, personally. But why do we need a juvenile turf sprint? I don't quite get that. But at any rate, we have a 14-race Breeders' Cup program, and I'm looking forward to diving in.
I do want to start with the category, with the race that you tracked, as opposed to going through race order. And I talked to most of the correspondents, and we didn't get a chance to get to you, but the distaff, and this was a race that from early in the season, as opposed to some other divisions that took shape as the year went on, we kind of knew from early in the winter, even pre-pandemic, that the distaff was going to shape up as a major confrontation. Now, of course, we thought that Midnight Bisou was going to be in there, sharing headlines with Monomoy Girl. She Bisou has been supplanted by a shocking 3-year-old filly in Swiss Skydiver, who didn't come from nowhere, but has written a story, Brad, that it really is throwback. And I mean, for her to do what she's done and just continue to thrive, it sets up for a different confrontation of favorites with her and Monomoy. But then there's also a very nice supporting cast. Talk about how you tracked the distaff and where you're going to end up.
Yeah, this is it's a terrific race. I mean, it historically is a very attractive race, and we've seen some of the most exciting races in Breeders' Cup history in the distaff. And even though this year's field, it is missing a little bit. Look, Midnight Bisou, I would have loved to have watched her, give it another shot. She dares the devil's knot in the field. Fighting Mad, who would have been formidable on the front end, skipped it. Vexatious was good for a short time in summer. Hard Not to Love, I still think she's better around one turn. John Sheriff, her trainer, disagrees. I would have loved to have seen her in the race. But we're left with a good field of 10, and Monomoy Girl is certainly the favorite. But you mentioned Swiss Skydiver, and her campaign is unbelievable. I mean, when she came out to California in early June for the Santa Anita Oaks, I thought, well, what's Ken McPeak doing? I mean, nobody ships out to California for a 3-year-old filly race, and all she did was go out and dust the field by 4 lengths. That was when I realized that I better start taking notice of this very good filly. To me, she's an iron filly. I mean, she runs everywhere. She runs once a month. She shows up against everybody. She beat boys in the Preakness. She's an unbelievable specimen. McPeak has done a terrific job with her. Robbie Alvarado gave her a terrific ride last time out at the Preakness. The door was left open on the inside, and Alvarado said, thank you very much, I'll take that spot, and he went on to outfinish Authentic. So, I mean, she is a very, very good filly. That doesn't mean she's going to defeat Monomoy Girl in the distaff on Saturday, but it sets up as one of the more intriguing showdowns. But neither one of these fillies is an absolute slam dunk. Look, I think Monomoy Girl is the best, fastest horse in the field. And from what I've seen on video, she looks like she's training great. All the vibes are great from her connections. And she's a legitimate favorite, one of the more probable winners of the 14 Breeders' Cup races. But you have some other very interesting fillies and mares in this field, including Ollie's Candy, who last year in the Breeders' Cup distaff finished fourth, kind of the end of the campaign. And she has not won a race since summer of 2019, Always Candy, which I think is quite surprising considering I think she's a faster filly this year, faster mare, than she was last year at age 4. Her numbers would suggest that that's the case. She shows up every single time, and it's just because she's been a victim of circumstance, not having won a race since July of 2019. Her most recent start in the Spinster was a lot better than looking. This is a replay that I urge bettors to take a look at before finalizing opinions on the distaff. Ollie's Candy was down inside. She was bottled up. She was visibly uncomfortable, and she never really got comfortable until she finally got outside late, and by that time the race was over and Dahlia won the race. The point I'm making is that Always Candy ran better than the line looks in the past performances. She earned another good number. She got a 95 buyer, a 1 on Thoroughgraph. She's drawn outside on Saturday, just inside of Monomoy Girl and Always Candy from Post 9. She won't get that inside trip again. She wants to be in the clear. She prefers to be in the clear. And having a race over the track, having stabled at Keeneland all autumn, I expect Always Candy to show up and run a big race. I doubt it's good enough to defeat Monomoy Girl, but I do believe it's good enough possibly to defeat Swiss Skydiver. And I'm curious about Swiss Skydiver. If she can come back and replicate a 105 buyer, a minus 1.5 on Thoroughgraph, well, she can win this race. I just wonder, what's the likelihood of back-to-back sky-high speed figures? I wouldn't put it past her, but I'm going to take a shot that Always Candy, who I have listed at 6-1, the winemaker at Keeneland listed at 10-1. I think I'm a little closer to the right price. But I think Always Candy is a very interesting filly based on her trip over the track. And then if you're looking for a real crazy horse, we have seen a couple of long shot winners in this field. 1994, One Dreamer paid $96. And in 2003 at Santa Anita, Adoration paid $83. What did those two fillies have in common? They both went straight to the lead and wired the field. There is one confirmed front runner in this year's Distaff field. She's not good enough on form. She's not even a graded stakes winner. But she is speed, and she should make the lead. Number 6, Lady Kate, who is 15-1 on the official morning line. She's going to make the lead, and I don't know how far she'll go. I don't know if she'll stop. I talked to her trainer, Eddie Keneally, just a week after she ran a kind of a poor fourth in the Spinster, and he said, "Now we're going to skip the Breeders' Cup." And lo and behold, here she is. She's in the field. So when I talked to Keneally last week, I said, "What changed?" He said, "Well, the filly changed. She came out of that race in top shape. She's crying to run. She's in good form." He recognizes that she did not run very well in the Spinster. But she's going to be loose on Saturday, Lady Kate will. I still think they'll run her down, but speed at a price is one of the it's a terrific gamble if you're into backing a long-shot frontrunner. So Lady Kate on the front end is kind of an intriguing prospect.
I'm glad you brought up Lady Kate and, in general, you know, the pace scenario, because there's two horses that I want to ask about, and one is going to be CC down inside, and I actually loved what Michael McCarthy chose to do in terms of stretching CC back out and cutting Speech back to the filly and mare sprint at 7/8. But CC from inside, with the coming out of that Derby City Distaff where they went 43-3, and the fact that she drew inside, and the fact that, you know, Velasquez is a kind of a forward going rider anyway, she's going to have to at least go and gain position. Harvest Moon, Brad, and you've had a chance to see Callahan's filly, and she feels like one of these, you know, kind of now 3-year olds that is going to come in here and you know, be overlooked. And she wants to be at least part of the, you know, the vanguard to pull from Tom Durkin. And I don't see how Swiss Skydiver doesn't have to go forward and gain position.
No, you're right. There's a handful of horses that will be forwardly placed, but I think there's only one confirmed frontrunner, and that is Lady Kate. You're right about CeCe stretching out from that 7-furlong sprint. She should be up close. I doubt that Velasquez is going to gun her off her feet and try to take the lead from Lady Kate. So there's going to be some jostling going into the first turn. Lady Kate should clear the field, and I think that she could potentially be unpressured depending on the strategy employed by CC and others. Regarding Harvest Moon, she will be overlooked, and the reason she will be overlooked is because her figures are very ordinary. She did earn a 97 buyer last time out, but on Thoroughgraph, she should be one of the longest shots in the field, 15-20-1. It would be a mistake to eliminate this filly from consideration based on her speed figures, because every race that she runs is a little bit better than the race before. She went from an allowance debut, third against winners, maiden winner, allowance, grade 3 3-year-olds, grade 2 older fillies and mares, and while the older fillies and mares in California, they're not that great this year, she won the race by 3/4. She did what she had to do. She wore down the front runner Fighting Mad, who looked like a cinch going in my opinion, held off the late rally of Hard Not to Love, and every race by Harvest Moon is better than the one before. Who's to say she can't make another forward move on Saturday and pop up in spring, a huge surprise? She's not there yet. I suspect that she won't be, but if she did move forward again and score an upset, I mean, that'd be a feather in the cap of Simon Callahan and the connections of this filly, who took all the time in the world that they needed with this filly. She was in training as a two-year-old. She wasn't ready. Little minor setbacks here and there. But once he got her into a groove, Simon Callahan, she's doing everything right. She has Flavian Pratt aboard, and she has enough tactical speed. In fact, she was up there close to a pretty quick pace in the Zenyatta last time out. They went 46-2, 110-1, and Harvest Moon was second behind those solid splits. So she should get a good trip sitting just off the speed, and another improved performance by her puts her in the hunt.
On the figure standpoint, and you know, the nice thing about, you know, particularly the DRF Player's Guide for the Breeders' Cup, one of my favorite sections every year that I end up, you know, putting into files, is the Breeders' Cup buyer par and the list of buyers that have won the various races. And the distaff in recent years has been kind of a volatile you know, set of results, as low as a 96 from Monomoy Girl at Churchill 2 years ago, and as high as a 105 from Beholder at Santa Anita in 16. Last year, Blue Prize, a 103. But I find, you know, the buyer par for these races, you know, very helpful, Brad, to kind of identify, you know, who is a legitimate contender. And there's a couple of horses, obviously, that have, you know, that have run triple-digit figs that, you know, that make them contenders. And there's two in particular, one that hasn't run a triple digit, but has run a negative number on Thoroughgraph, Horologist and Valiance. And, you know, Valiance comes in here with three straight wins since returning to the dirt and getting on dirt seriously with that spinster try. You know, she's got the win at the distance at on the surface. And then there's Horologist, who's got a couple of races that absolutely are as good as anything that Monomoy Girl has run this year and as good as Swiss Skydiver. So the thing that's fascinating about this race is a lot of people will take an attitude that, well, it's you know, we can just use Swiss Skydiver and Monomoy and I'm covered. And it does feel like there's, you know, kind of a roulette wheel chance for several fillies in here. You talked about an extreme pace scenario that could, you know, potentially, you know, drag Lady Kate around. I see a couple of different scenarios with some emergent type horses that are coming in at double digit prices, and Horologist and Valiance, I think, need to be discussed.
I completely agree. I mean, these are good fillies in peak form, coming off big wins last time out. In the case of Valiance, you can look through her path. I mean, she's won 6 out of 8, so she like needs no introduction. But the best race of her career was her most recent start. So what changed? Well, it's pretty clear. It was the first time she ran 2 turns on a fast track. And she won. She defeated Always Candy by 3/4 of a length. She earned a big number, a 96 buyer speed figure, the best number of her career. She got a -1.75 on Thoroughgraph. She has enough tactical speed to be within range of the pace setters. And if she runs two alike, why can't she win? She can. Absolutely she can. Valiance can. She's trained by Pletcher. She's the daughter of Tappet. I mean, she's got a lot of things. There's a lot of things to like about Valiance at a price. The question you have to ask is, can she run two alike? And could Always Candy have defeated her with a different trip last time out? But Valiance, she scares me at a big price. As for Horologist, I'm not sure what to do with her, and I'm going to probably end up taking a negative stand on her for a couple reasons. She did win the Molly Pitcher with a big number at Monmouth. For some reason, and I could be wrong about this, but I do not trust any speed figure earned at Monmouth. I've seen so many high-figure Monmouth horses go to other tracks and come back down to earth. And it's not a knock on the figures at all, because I've seen it across the board with buyer's figures and with thoroughgraphs. But these giant numbers earned at Monmouth are not always replicated at other tracks. In the case of Horologist, well, she regressed in her next start in the La Troyenne. She was no match for Monomoy Girl. But then she popped up and won the Beldame by three decisive lengths at 7-1. So, you know, maybe I'm making a mistake by downgrading Horologist's chances. There were only four runners in the Beldame. And, you know, Point of Honor and Dunbar Road really didn't show up. They just kind of ran around the track, and Horologist took advantage of the situation. She's trained by Bill Mott, Horologist is. Mott has won this race five times. They spent $100,000 to make Horologist eligible for the Breeders' Cup, so she clearly came out of the Beldame in top shape. I'm only bringing all this up because although I'm going to take a negative, my stance on Horologist is anti-Horologist, I could definitely be wrong. She's run fast. She's in the right hands. She's in top form, and if she wins, I'm probably going to lose, and that very easily could happen. Let me put it to you this way. If somebody came up to me and said, I love Horologist, I would not talk them off of that selection.
Couple of things, Brad, and I'm going to ask you for your give me your top three or top four in order.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think Monomoy Girl is kind of a freaky filly in that she has won so many races. She's crossed the wire first 13 out of 14 starts. I think that she's going to be very tough to beat. I would call her the most probable winner of Breeders' Cup Saturday. I'm going to try to get Always Candy in to finish second in front of Swiss Skydiver and Lady Kate. I give a long shot chance on the front end. So 10-9-5-6, Monomoy Girl, Always Candy, Swiss Skydiver, and Lady Kate. And believe me, Harvest Moon, Horologist, Valiance, they all scare me.
Got news from your colleague Dave Grenig, and George Weaver has come out with the news that Vekoma spiked a fever, probably a shipping fever kind of thing, and one of the risks you take shipping in on top of the race, Vekoma out of the Breeders' Cup Sprint, and this is for those certainly. I mean, first of all, let me just say how sorry I am for, you know, for the George and Cindy and for Matt Gatsis and Randy Hill and their, you know, and their friends and family. That's number one. Number two, there were a lot of people lining up to bet against him from out there and, you know, off of a long layoff. So this really throws some betting plans into a cocked hat. Brad, talk about the sprint from your perspective.
Yeah, that's a huge defection. I mean, Vekoma was going to be the favorite. The sprint division this year is not the strongest that we've seen, and Vekoma would have entered with the, you know, quote, best horse credentials, having won the Met and the Carter. Coming in off a layoff and shortening up to six furlongs would have definitely been a challenge, but Vekoma was the best horse going in. And now we're left with a scramble. I mean, 13 are left. I don't know. Is the filly good enough? Frank Swaquette? I don't see why not. I mean, she's fast. How about Yalpon? All he's done is win a couple of graded stakes against three-year-olds. But he's running fast. He has an upfront running style that should play well. Interestingly, in this year's sprint, there's no real killer speed in the field this year. And that's a dynamic that definitely favors the filly, Frank Swaquette, and Yalpon, who I'm going to end up picking as my top choices with Vekoma out. And, that's unfortunate news. They did everything right with Vekoma trying to get to the Breeders' Cup, but it makes this race even more wide open than it already is. But you have to respect the speed of Frank Swaquette and Yalpon. And CZ Rocket has been impressive out in California. He's been impressive because he's winning races that did not unfold in favor of his closing style. He's been forced to be close to the front in both his recent graded stakes wins. And even trainer Peter Miller has acknowledged he's best when he sits back off a hot pace and blasts home. That might not happen in the Breeders' Cup Sprint on Saturday because there is no real true, 21 flat, 43 and change type of speed in this field. So CZ Rocket, once again, will have to be taken out of his game plan to be forwardly placed, chasing tepid fractions. He was able to do that against Flagstaff. I don't know if he'll be able to do that against Franks Rocket and Yalpon.
You got an outsider in here, either a West Coaster or somebody that you think. We had a fun conversation yesterday with Terry Off, who's got Empire of Gold, who he expects to run a big race, and just got corralled late by Diamond Oops, and he's got real speed, and I imagine that this scratch, which I should mention gets Lasting Legacy, Bob Hess was waiting on the outside to get in with the Tapizar 6-year-old Lasting Legacy, who was just claimed away from Brett Calhoun, is going to get into the Breeders' Cup. This is David Burnson and partners. Pretty funny and well-known connection. But it feels like somebody is going to take advantage of this scenario and want to be a part of the pace.
Well, yeah, I mean that happens more often than not. I mean, everybody looks at the form and go, "Oh, there's no speed in the race, so let's just go for it." Next thing you know, you got four horses battling for the lead, or conversely, you have a race that's filled with speed and everybody takes back and somebody gets loose. So pace is one of the most slippery of all handicapping considerations, because you can never be entirely certain what's going to happen when the gates open. We know where a horse fits on class. We know what speed figures they have earned, and we generally have a pretty good idea of their condition. But that's only 3/4 of the most important handicapping factors. When it comes to pace, a lot of things change when you get 13 or 14 runners busting out of the gate, and maybe the pace will come up fast. And if it does, then I do like the chances of CZ Rocket. With regards to an upsetter, I think we all kind of feel like Firenze Fire is a good horse at Belmont. But what's he done away from Belmont? Mm-hmm. Well, I think he's a pretty good horse away from Belmont also. And in this year's relatively murky type of field, Firenze Fire comes into the Breeders' Cup Sprint at Keeneland, a track on which he has never raced, but he's in top form. He's won half of his 6 starts this year. He earned a big number last time out. He has a pressing type of style that he's not pace dependent, I guess is what I'm trying to say, with Firenze Fire. And what if he replicates his Belmont form at Keeneland? Is there any reason why he cannot win? Absolutely not. I think Firenze Fire, at 8-1, his odds are going to drop due to the scratch, but he would be an upset candidate in this relatively soft Breeders' Cup Sprint field.
Well, he was going to be my pick anyway, and I think he still might be. Certainly respect Yaupin in here. Now I've got a rooting interest between Declan Carroll and Terry Off with Empire of Gold, who's got kind of that board hitting profile in the Breeders' Cup Sprint. I invoked the likes of Bet on Sunshine. There's the regional players, the horses from the provinces, have done well in this race historically. They've gotten shares. It's an interesting group, and I certainly am not happy that you take a favorite out in this setting, but I suppose Vekoma now refocuses, and missing this, Brad, we'll talk to Dave Grenig, but I imagine that the Cigar Mile becomes his target now.
Well, that would be ideal. I mean, this is a horse we're wondering, could he get 6 furlongs? Well, he's not going to get 6 furlongs on Saturday, but the Cigar Mile, a one-turn mile would be right in his wheelhouse. So that kind of would seem to be the obvious late-season objective.
Let's stay on the main track, Brad. And since we talked distaff and sprint, let me get your classic viewpoint in before we talk the youngsters and probably the filly and mare sprint. I'll let you focus on the main track races and Marcus Hirsch tomorrow and Steve Anderson. They'll let them do the turf, and I'm sure you've got a turf opinion or two or three. But let's get the classic in while we can. This ended up being for an undefined group of handicap horses at the beginning of the year, the three-year-olds did their part, and then some of the older horses, you know, who we didn't really know what to expect with maturity, they kind of fleshed out nicely. And then there's, you know, horses like Higher Power and Tom's Detat, and this ended up being, for a field of 10, I'm not going to say anybody can win, because I don't think that's the case. But certainly, you know, there's five or six legitimate win candidates, and everybody can, you know, get a major share if they run their A race.
There's no doubt about it. And this is one of the deeper fields that we've seen in the Classic in some time. I don't know if it's the greatest field, but it certainly is deep. I mean, I think there's I can count eight horses who can win this race. Mm. No disrespect to Global Campaign or Title Ready. Those would be my throwouts. But, I mean, I wouldn't even be surprised if Higher Power pops up and runs a big race. But when all is said and done, the top handicap horse in the country is pretty clear, and he's the favorite. Improbable has been decisive. He won the Gold Cup at Santa Anita by open lengths. Shipped back to Saratoga, won the Whitney, came back home, got a perfect setup in the Awesome again. He's winning grade one races. He's won at a mile and one quarter. He's versatile. He ships. He's in top form. He's trained by a guy who wins big races. Improbable is rock solid. That doesn't mean he's a slam dunk cinch. He's not. Because Maximum Security, his stablemate, Jay Pribman, has been watching this guy train out at Santa Anita, Maximum Security, watching each of his recent workouts, and he is convinced, Pribman is, and I think Baffert also suggested as much, that Maximum Security is a better horse going into the Breeders' Cup Classic than he was going into the Awesome again. And Maximum Security is a bulldog. I mean, he wants to beat you. Last time out, it was weird because he's pretty much got blown away, and it's the first time in his career that that's happened. This is a horse who digs in when he is challenged in the stretch. He did it in the San Diego earlier this summer. He did it in the Kentucky Derby as a three-year-old crossing the wire first when at the head of the lane it looked like he'd be completely swallowed. He wants to beat you, Maximum Security does, and he has trained a lot better since the Awesome again. I think if Baffert had his druthers, he would have shipped him back to Belmont for the Jockey Club Gold Cup, but the owners wanted to stay home and run in California, so, you know, Maximum Security was just second best on the day. But Maximum Security, not only is he a better horse now, I believe, than his previous start, but doesn't he figure for an absolute dream trip? I'm sure that Authentic is going to make the lead. He has to go. His speed is his weapon. That gives Maximum Security the option of sitting second behind the three-year-old front runner and making his move when it's time. So Maximum Security, to me, is Improbable's main threat. Tis the Law, with 9 weeks between starts, all reports are he's training great. I don't know about the inside draw, post number two for Tis the Law. I think sometimes we spend a little too much time talking about post position, but in the case of Tis the Law, I think you have to at least recognize that early in his career, he was a horse that did not like being down inside horses. It's going to be Manny Franco's job to get to the outside with Tis the Law, and I expect him to run a lot better on Saturday than he did in the Kentucky Derby. He got beat by a good horse last time out, Authentic. But Tis the Law, with that nine-week freshening, he will fire. And then Authentic, why can't he just take the track, get loose, and race wire to wire? So those are the four most logical horses in the field, but they're not the only horses in the race. I mean, you know, even Tacitus, I know everybody loves to hate on this horse. Remember, Bill Mott won this race with Drosselmeyer a few years ago. Who would have thought that Drosselmeyer would pop up and win the Breeders' Cup Classic? By My Standards is fast. Tom's Detat is fast. Higher Power ran races, well, even his runner-up finish in the Gold Cup earlier this year in June would be a fast enough race to win the Breeders' Cup Classic. It's a deep field. I like the favorite. No real creative imaginative handicapping in this case.
The one thing about, to me, that's compromising more for Authentic than for Maximum Security is the presence of Global Campaign. Doesn't he, if not, if not vie for the lead, doesn't he at least harass Authentic and, you know, potentially take a little of the starch out? I can't imagine that after what really feels like a gaffe on Johnny V's part in the Preakness, that Baffert is saying anything other than get the lead at all costs, right? I mean, isn't that the mission?
No doubt about it. I mean, it was a gaffe. I mean, I think if Velasquez could ride the Preakness again, I think he would adopt a little bit different strategy, be a little bit more aggressive, open up, and make them chase Authentic speed. And a lot of people don't realize that front runners need to run fast, and they need to use their weapon rather than sucking the whole field along and turning it into a sprint for home. So that's the plan for Authentic, to take the lead. With regards to the speed of Global Campaign, I have a little difference of opinion. I mean, he did go wire to wire in the Woodward, but they were walking on the front end. And, you know, I think he just kind of made the lead by default. And his only other previous front-running win was at Monmouth against a very nondescript bunch in a grade three. So I don't think he's fast enough to keep up with Authentic. I'm not even sure if he's fast enough to keep up with Maximum Security. I'm talking about Global Campaign. So even though he won his two most recent starts, gate to wire, I think that was more a function of the field and the race flow and the pace scenario than all of a sudden Global Campaign has turned into this, you know, dynamic front runner.
Breeders' Cup Classic. Brad, the run down the numbers.
Yeah, again, not very creative. Improbable, Maximum Security, Tis the Law, Authentic, 8-10-2-9, and I believe that's just about in the order of the odds. So, again, I'm not being very creative in the Breeders' Cup
Class. That's all right. Well, we've certainly gotten plenty of price reaches from you. We're not worried about no one's going to call you a chalk eater. No. The other two Saturday dirt races, the opener at 12:02, the Filly and Mare Sprint, which is fascinating. We got, you know, Gamine coming back here. Baffert wasn't, it's funny, I was at the draw and Baffert was not bothered by his three horses drawing the outside posts, and you know, typically he doesn't like, when he's got multiple entries, he does not like them, you know, next to each other in case one, you know, breaks badly and interferes. He was, however, not happy about Gamine drawing the two. That disappointed him a bit, pretty bitterly.
That was a hit on the chances of Gamine. Maybe she's good enough. Maybe she'll overcome the draw. She's going to have to use the speed that she has to make the lead from down inside. They're certainly not going to take back. But from where she is drawn, she's going to be under pressure every step of the way. And the filly that's going to, I think, pressure her the most is the most likely winner of the Breeders' Cup Filly Mare Sprint, and that's Serengeti Empress. Serengeti Empress is fast. I mean, she was fast last time when she won the finished second at Churchill Downs, 21-4, 43-3, and then the race before at Saratoga, winning the Ballerina, 21-3, 43-3 again. So Serengeti Empress is fast. Now she's drawn outside Gamine. She can be the one applying pressure to this very good 3-year-old filly, and I like Serengeti Empress quite a bit. In the Filly Mare Sprint. It's her third start in the Breeders' Cup, Serengeti Empress. She ran in the Juvenile Fillies 2 years ago. Last year, she ran in the Distaff. Now she's doing what she does best, and that's one turn. She was good enough, classy enough, to carry her speed two turns early in her career when she won the Kentucky Oaks, but sprinting is really her game. From where she's drawn, she's going to be, you know, putting it to Gamine every step of the way, and I like Serengeti Empress's chances quite a bit. If she's 3-1, I'm going in.
I feel that way more and more as well, and you know, I've enjoyed Gamine all year, and felt that you know, this was going to be her big chance. But Serengeti has been so courageous and so indomitable in her efforts. Now there is a pair of other pace factors involved in here. And in the midst of Biz, and to the left out of the four hole for Cipriano Contreras and Manny Esquivel, and then Venetian Harbor, and she's lining up inside of Serengeti. Now, not that Venetian or in the midst of Biz necessarily have enough speed to vie with the two favorites, but they're certainly going to go forward, and you got the long backstretch going 7/8, and it just feels like there'll be some prompting in here. How much of an opportunity, you know, Speech is inside, is going to save ground and be in behind the speed and come with her run, and then there's going to be the late runners like Sconson, Sally's Curling, and Bell's the One, and I do think, and I haven't even mentioned Come Dancing, who's very respectable. I don't know if she, you know, if it's Gary Young a couple of ticks past midnight for her, but there are some horses that are going to try to cut into potentially, you know, tiring leaders.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, the fastest horses in the field are Gamine and Serengeti Empress, but in the case of In the Midst of Biz and Venetian Harbor, their fractions are not as quick as those that have been set by the two favorites, Gamine and Serengeti Empress. But the thing about horses in general is they tend to run to position. They run like they typically run. How does In the Midst of Biz typically run? She tries to get toward the front.
Right.
Same thing with Venetian Harbor. So although their splits are not quick enough to get that close, they're going to try, and they're going to try. They could make this pace a lot quicker than anybody imagined, and they're both drawn outside Gamine, so that's two more, you know, potential thorns in the side of the morning line favorite. And interestingly, the filly mare sprint is a race that has a long history of meltdowns that produce mm-hmm. crazy prices. All you have to do is go back 2 years ago to Shamrock Rose, 25-1, rallying from dead last. Or in 2017, similar situation. Bar of Gold, 66-1, rallying from the back of the pack. So this is a race that has a meltdown history, and who's to say that that won't happen again? And if it does, then of course the most likely beneficiary is Kentucky-based Bell's the One, who sits back and runs fast late, and she defeated Serengeti Empress last time out. So if the pace gets really hot and heavy, Bell's the One is going to be in a really good spot. But, you know, the more we talk about Gamine, the less I like her. I actually picked her second just based on raw ability, but this race flow does not set up for her chances at all.
Well, and I've been flogging Speech for weeks in advance, and I was thrilled when McCarthy said he was going to turn her back. It seems very clever, and he's very good at doing this. From a fig note, as you were mentioning, you know, the likes of Bar of Gold and Shamrock and Wavell Avenue comes to mind. It's really been a feast or famine race. It's either been a price or you know, a short price in here. Feffi last year, the 106, Shamrock Rose, a 92 buyer, 94s and 95s. The prior 4 years, Shamrock, Bar of Gold, Finest City, and Wavell Avenue. So mid-90s. But the reality is here, you've got Speech, who's got a triple digit. We know what Gamine has done with the 108 and the 110. The only other, I think, in here that's got a triple digit fig is Serengeti. Yeah, the 101, and that was going two turns. So it, from a fig standpoint, it's kind of interesting. And if it's going to be a meltdown, you probably will get a 90s, a high, you know, mid to high 90s buyer. And if, you know, Serengeti or perhaps Gamine somehow gets loose, then you could foresee a triple digit. But I know there's plenty of people that are really counting. There's two schools, it seems. Counting on Serengeti to run, you know, one of those courageous races again, or you know, somebody like a Bell's the One, and this is Neil Pessin's first Breeders' Cup. That would be a very popular in New Orleans and in Louisville. There'd be a lot of celebration if Neil Pessin were to win a Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, with regards to the speed figure pars, one of the things that I actually prefer looking at, as opposed to what is typically requires to win this race, is what has a horse done leading up to the race. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the case of Shamrock Rose, okay, she earned a 92 buyer speed figure in winning the Breeders' Cup filly mare sprint 2 years ago, but she came in off an 86. Bar of Gold came in off a 79 3 years ago. So, you know, you don't necessarily have to go into the race having earned a giant number last time out. In the case of, you know, most of the top contenders, Gamine, Serengeti Empress, and Belle's the One, they all are coming in off, you know, 96, 97 figs. I think this race is going to be run to form. I expect Serengeti Empress or Belle's the One. But, you know, just because a horse did not run fast in its most recent start does not mean that, you know, they cannot run fast this weekend in the filly mare sprint. And with regards to speech, yeah, she has that 101 to run back to, and that was earned, guess what, at Keeneland, her only start at Keeneland. So she does like this racetrack. If she can somehow work out a trip, she could possibly be an upset candidate.
Well, speaking of liking this racetrack, let's talk about the Dirt Mile. And here is one of the really nice stories of 2020. There, in racing, there's been some nice stories. Elsewhere, not so much. But Art Collector, of course, you look down, you see 1-for-1 at Keeneland, a bluegrass winner, and of course beat Swiss Skydiver and a couple of others of note, including Rushy, who's back here. People may have forgotten that Rushy was third in this race. It seems to go through Complexity, a very, very fair and logical 2-to-1 favorite, but there's some solid hard hitters in here. You got a resurgent type in K-Nix Go. You got War of Will, who's had this kind of funny circuitous route back to a main track try. Sharp Samurai, who you've got to be very familiar with, Mark Glatz, Red Baron Barn, Rancho Temescal, First Samurai gelding, and I thought this was a very clever angle for them, going turf to dirt. He is a absolute check-earning machine, and I think this is one of the most fun races of the whole weekend.
Well, it is. It's a very interesting race, and Sharp Samurai, he hasn't won a race in 2 years, but it's really not his fault. I mean, he shows up every single start. He finished second behind a horse that would have been my top selection in the Breeders' Cup Mile, Mo Forza. That was in the City of Hope Mile, fast mile running 132, and Sharp Samurai lost by less than 2 lengths. Before that, he chased Maximum Security home. I'm not sure if Sharp Samurai can, you know, ship back to Kentucky and reproduce his California form in a completely different environment for a trainer who doesn't have a whole lot of experience shipping horses to big races out of state. But I do respect Sharp Samurai's, you know, intrinsic ability, and if he pops up and wins this race, wouldn't surprise me at all. When all is said and done, they have to beat Complexity, because he's just a fast horse who's going to use his speed and try to take the track and go wire to wire, and I don't see why he can't do it. There's probably other speed in here. There is other speed in here, including, you know, Nix Go will be forwardly placed, but Complexity is just the fastest horse in the race. 110 buyer last time out. He has 3 successive thoroughgraph numbers, -1.5 each time, that are just faster than anyone else in here has run. The question for Complexity, can he stay 2 turns? He's only tried it 1 other time. He came out of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile 2 years ago with some shin issues that trainer Chad Brown is convinced compromised his chances that day. So Complexity stretches out in top form. He's the one to catch. He's the favorite. So, once again, this is one of those situations where, you know, when you're trying to pick the logical winner, you hope you don't, or most probable winner, you hope you don't end up on the favorite. I did. I ended up with Complexity. I think he's going to probably be long gone, but who knows? Maybe a mile around 2 turns is too far for him. What about Nix Go? Can he reproduce that allowance win? You know, 4 horses that Nix Go defeated last time out when he earned a 107 have since returned to run. None of the 4 finished in the money. So it was basically Knicks Go has this giant number of a 107 buyer, a minus four on Thorograph, but it was basically a workout for Knicks Go. So I don't know. Can he do that again in an actual race chasing a real horse like Complexity? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that at all. Rushy's going to be coming on late. I suspect he might be better around one turn, but again, that's I'm uncertain about that. Mr. Freeze is in form. He likes the Keeneland track. And Brad Cox's other horse, Owendale, I know he's drawn outside, but he's going to drop over, save ground, and come with the run, and the pace should be legitimate. So there are a lot of ways to go in this race. And as much respect as I have for my top selections, Complexity and Knicks Go, I'll spread this race fairly deep in multi-race exotics because you just have to. It could completely collapse. I will say this. I'm kind of against Art Collector. I just don't see in his form that he's a Breeders' Cup mile type of horse. And War of Will, not a big fan of his either, switching from turf to dirt. I know that Art Collector, you know, he won the Bluegrass over the Keeneland track, but I think that he was exposed in the Preakness. I just don't think he's quite this caliber. And War of Will, I still can't believe that he actually won the Preakness in 2019. I'm not a fan of his switching from turf to dirt. I'll probably put those two right in the winner's circle, Art Collector and War of Will, but I'm against both of those.
Pretty unique scenario to have two horses like this and have the kinds of it's one of the interesting things about this race is how it kind of gets horses from everywhere and going in different directions. So to have a Preakness winner in this.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. And look, War of Will is a terrific racehorse. I'm not knocking him at all. Five wins, a million eight, and, you know, grade one wins on turf and dirt. I just don't like him in this spot. You know, if he's a short price, he's listed at 10-1. So I don't want to be too critical of a horse that's going to start at double digits. But I just don't see him winning this race. And again, I could be wrong.
You mentioned chasing, and we'll talk about the two juvenile races on Friday. Brad Free with us, of course, from Daily Racing Form, going over all the dirt races. And to me, there's a scenario that, race dynamics plays such a huge part, Brad. And reinvestment risk has got a very different and potentially advantageous scenario after the Hopeful and Champagne versus Jackie's Warrior. Jackie's Warrier is with Vekoma out. Jackie's Warrier seemingly going to be the shortest price of the weekend. And he's going to have company on the front end. And he's going two turns for the first time. And it seems to me that reinvestment risk can kind of sit and just come with a run, maybe an inside-outside trip. And so I'm going to try to do a good magic. This horse reminds me of what Chad did with Good Magic at Del Mar a couple of years back. And for that reason, I'm going to use the two of them, obviously. But I think they're the only two that can win this juvenile on Friday.
Well, I have a difference of opinion. I like Brad Cox trained Essential Quality, who showed in his career debut he can rally from behind. That was a sprint. And then last time out, he basically toyed with the field in Breeders' Futurity. Essential Quality is a lightly raced colt making just the third start of his career. He's headed the right direction with a win over the track and a versatile running style. Jackie's Warrior is far and away the fastest horse in this field. I wonder if he's a little too fast for his own good, and can he go two turns? I'm not willing to take 7-5 to find out. I did a little bit of research and looked up the last 20 two-year-olds who earned a triple-digit buyer speed figure. Only one of those 20 was able to reproduce that triple-digit buyer, and that was a horse by the name of American Pharaoh. Every other of those two-year-olds that ran back regressed by at least 9 points on the buyer scale. So when a two-year-old earns a 100, there's a very good chance that they are going to regress next time out. Now, maybe Jackie's Warrior is another American Pharaoh. We don't know yet. We know he's very fast, but I kind of expect him to possibly come back down to earth. I respect his speed. He could get loose. He could be gone. But if essential quality makes another forward move, and if Jaffe's Warrior regresses like is possible off the 100 buyer and going two turns for the first time, then I think this race, you know, it opens up for a horse, an improving horse, such as essential quality and reinvestment risk. I wouldn't talk anybody off of that horse at all. He's certainly ran okay. It's all he ran last time out. He's finished second to Jaffe's Warrior twice. I don't know, maybe third time will be the charm. To me, the interesting horse in the race is California Shipper Rombauer. Interesting at a price. He's 15-1. His figures are not fast enough. But when he finished second in the Grade 1 American Pharoah last time out at Santa Anita, he did it rallying from last in a race that was dominated by speed. The winner, Get Her Number, was forwardly placed every step of the way. The pace was very slow, and Rombauer rallied well and finished well. He's going to get a little bit different scenario on Friday in the juvenile. The pace should be quick, and if it is, Rombauer has a chance to outrun his number at 15-1. I think he's kind of the goofy horse coming from off the pace, shipping in from California. Our two-year-olds out here are ordinary so far, and Rombauer will have to step up, but he gets the proper race flow to flatter his closing rally.
Now, finally, Brad, the juvenile filly side of the equation on Friday, and one of the most interesting referendums on the old chestnut, figs don't lie. There's the school of thought that says that Princess Noor is a mirage, and when confronted with significantly faster animals, that she's going to be hard pressed. Then there's, you know, the eye test crowd. Where do we shake out?
I think this race is a lot more than a one horse race. I think it's more than a three horse race. I wondered the same thing with regards to Princess Noor. I mean, she has been dazzling in all three of her starts, including last time out, when I thought she was going to make the lead and be long gone in the chandelier going two turns for the first time. But she got kind of stuck down inside horses. She took a little bit of dirt. She had to come wide and rallied and won by eight. The thing about Princess Noor is I don't think Espinoza has asked her to run yet. He hasn't had to. She won her debut by more than two, her next start by more than six, and her last start by more than eight. But her numbers are not very flashy. And if I'm going to take a short price on a horse, and I've done it many times, we all have, I want everything to be perfect. It's not perfect for Princess Noor. She's not a very fast horse so far. Maybe she will be on Friday. But if, you know, you want to take a short number on a horse with no advantage on speed figures, well, more power to you. I think that this race, this is the one race in which I could very easily be embarrassed. And the reason I say that is because I'm picking a 20-1 shot on top. Crazy Beautiful, trained by Ken McPeak. I became a fan of hers watching her first two dirt races, the debutante at Ellis Park and the Pocahontas at Churchill Downs. She had all kinds of trouble. In both of those starts, she bowled through contenders. She bowled through traffic, like an older seasoned colt, and she ran well in both those starts. So what happened to Alcibiades last time out? Well, Simply Ravishing, her stablemate, made the lead and raced Gate to Wire, and Crazy Beautiful was taken out of her game plan, taken out of her the strategy she employed in her two previous starts, and she kind of had to chase the lone front runner, and all she could do was finish second. Crazy Beautiful is not fast enough to win this race, much like Princess Noor. But the pace scenario should be contested. I think Princess Noor has speed. I mean, these are two-year-old fillies, some of them running two turns for the first time, and so I think the pace is going to be certainly a lot more contested than it was last time out when Crazy Beautiful chased a loose on the lead front runner. Crazy Beautiful will take back. She's going to be near the back of the field, and then she'll come with a run. And if they go fast early, They are going, she's going to be rolling late, and I like her chances, crazy beautiful, to, I don't know if she's going to win, but I do expect her to outrun her odds. I picked her on top. Again, it might be an embarrassing selection. Princess Noor, she's been visually impressive, simply ravishing. She dusted my top selection last time out and day out of the office, another 3-for-3 filly. But when all is said and done in the juvenile fillies, I'm going to take a shot and back a 20-to-1 outsider in this small field, and that's crazy beautiful.
Wow. All right. That's the other McPeak scenario. So we certainly get plenty of that. That's an angle that... not unusual. Interesting. You surprised me with this one, Brad.
Well, thank you. I'd like to be surprised. I like to stand alone from the crowd. I mean,
there you go.
Look, we can all you know, recognize who the favorites are. Bet horses like Monomoy Girl, you know, or Improbable. But it's when you have an opinion that is different from the mainstream. That's when, and if you're not afraid to lose, you can step up and take a shot. Crazy Beautiful, I'm going to take a shot. Here's an interesting note. Crazy Beautiful, her last two buyer speed figures, 79 and 78. Princess Noor's last two buyer speed figures, 78 and 79. One of those is 20-to-1, the other one is 9-to-5. So even on figs, it's not that crazy of a shot.
Well, it could be Crazy Beautiful for the bankroll.
Exactly.
Brad, a couple of notes. Any turf horse that you're looking forward to betting over the weekend?
Well, I mean, I've been probably making a mistake by reading some of the European reports with regards to some of the shippers coming in and you know, reviewing the English bookmakers' lines and stuff. And in the turf, I kind of settled on a horse by the name of Mogul.
Sure.
He's only 5-to-1. I don't know if he's good enough, but, you know, I respect Magical. She's rock solid. I don't think she had a great trip. I don't think she liked the ground last time out either at Ascot, and she'll be tough to beat. But Mogul is an improving three-year-old. Aidan O'Brien has won the turf 6 times. Three of those 6 winners were three-year-olds. And I think Mogul's over here to win this race, and I'm going to take a shot with him. Turf racing, Europeans coming in, not my expertise. I'm just taking a shot, trying to beat the favorite, and I certainly respect the speed of Channel Maker. So I'm going to take a chance with Mogul over Channel Maker, and if Magical shows up, she can beat them both.
Anybody, any other turf, mile, or sprinter or anything?
I the turf sprint, yeah. I think that the horse down on the rail, in from California, not getting any notice at all, very little publicity, horse by the name of Big Runner. The turf sprint this year is a mess. It's a scramble. I don't want any part of Got Stormy rallying from dead last as the favorite. Big Runner from the inside draw at double-digit price. His comeback was outstanding. His workouts since then have been sizzling. And I'm going to gamble on Big Runner to take them wire to wire in the turf sprint.
I saw Big Runner out yesterday morning, right when I got in at about 6:45, I think. And I saw the VG on the saddle pad, and I realized who it was without even seeing the number saddle cloth that they. That they give the Breeders' Cup runners. It's a nice. It'd be nice. In fact, I think if I'm Jay, we'll talk to Jay Pribman obviously tomorrow or Friday. Jay is the one who first alerted us to the emergence that was involved with Big Runner.
Yeah, he's good. I mean, and trainer Victor Garcia and his father, the owner Juan Garcia. These are a couple of guys who've been around the block a time or two.
Absolutely.
They're under the radar type of guys. They don't get a lot of publicity or hype, which is fine with them and fine for people who like to bet on their horses. Maybe Big Runner gets run into the ground by other speed to his outside, but you know, at 12-to-1 on the morning line, I'll take my chances, and I just love his workout pattern since his comeback. Not only did he set a fast pace winning the Grade 2 Eddie D at Santa Anita, but he's come back and posted 2 bullet workouts on the main track, since then, which tells me he came out of this race in top order. He'll take the lead, and he'll take them as far as he can. And by the way, the horse that finished second behind Big Runner, Wild Man Jack, ran a lot better than the line might look. And this is another situation where you might want to take a look at the replay of Wild Man Jack. He got stuck in behind horses on the turn. He didn't get clear until the stretch. He finished well. I'm not sure if he's good enough. I don't know if he can overcome the wide draw. But Wild Man Jack's runner-up finish behind Big Runner was a little bit better than that one-length margin of defeat. And I wouldn't be at all surprised to see either one of the California shippers produce a very good performance in the turf sprint, Big Runner and or Wild Man Jack.
Brad Free, everybody. Brad Free won on Twitter, but just look for Brad's coverage and the analysis as part of the full bore player's guide. Are you contributing to the wagering strategies?
Not for Keeneland on Saturday. No, I think somebody else has been going to be doing that. But I will be contributing to the Del Mar betting strategy. And anybody who's been following that for the last 3 or 4 weeks probably has a little bit more money than they started with.
Very nice. Good job. And, of course, the betting strategy offering at DRF has really been a nice innovation. David Aragona and Mike Beer have been doing a lot of the, you know, the East Coast stuff. And I'm sure that... I'll talk to Marcus tomorrow, and Marcus he seems to always know all the details. So we'll keep that up, and we will cycle through all of the DRF correspondence. Very unusual, Brad, to be here at a Breeders' Cup. Only Marty and Nicole Russo doing the work. Everybody else working remotely, like Dave Grenig and Jay and you and everybody. Steve Anderson, Marcus. Just the best coverage wall to wall. I appreciate it.
Well, you're quite welcome. And, you know, we love to cover the sport, and we love to gamble on horses. That's what I'm in the game for. And looking forward to both Friday and Saturday, crazy beautiful in the Juvenile Fillies. We're going to sink or swim with a 20-1 shot.
I love it. Brad Free, everybody. Brad, best of luck. We'll talk soon.
See you, Steve. Bye now.
A terrific hour from Brad Free, and always carve out that kind of a segment with Brad into the cup. He's got just a great, great angles. And, of course, his book, too. We always wrap up, and I forget to mention the book while he's on the air with us, but Handicapping 101, and a great introductory type handicapping tome. Let's take a break, and only have two of them this morning because we got tons to do. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. We'll get Sid's Breeders' Cup pushes, the horses that he has sniffed out based on pedigree, and looking forward to his thoughts. Later, Vance Hansen is going to join us. Vance will go through a lot of the grass races. That's why we did the dirt with Brad, and we'll do a lot of turf with Vance. And I think, what else? What I got? Seth Merrow, and there's something else. Somebody else is swinkling. I'm kind of a little punchy, to be honest. Got about 2.5 to 3 hours, about 11 to quarter to 3 last night. Back after this, though, we'll talk to Sid.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.